In deep space, a saucer-shaped spacecraft cruises by overhead. Projecting from the bottom of the screen, a title reads, Forbidden Planet. We pan across a view of the vast universe.
In the final decade of the 21st century, men and women in rocket ships landed on the moon. By 2200 AD, they had reached the other planets of our solar system. Almost at once, there followed the discovery of Kuiper Drive, through which the speed of light was first attained and later greatly surpassed. And so at last, mankind began the conquest and colonization of deep space. United Planets cruiser C-57D. Now more than a year out from Earth base on a special mission to the planetary system of the great main sequence star, Altair.
In a spacecraft, a man works at a computer. Another man watches him.
When do we get a DC fixed, Jerry?
Half a minute, Skipper.
Three crewmen seated at a table behind Jerry and the Skipper join them at the computer.
Ship on course, sir. We'll reach DC point at 1701. That's less than 3 minutes now.
Jerry looks at a navigational model before him.
All right. Take it away.
Aye, aye, sir.
Chief, we'll drop back below light speed in about 3 minutes. Got your breakable gear stowed?
Aye, aye, sir.
All right, good.
The skipper looks at a document on a table.
DC set and punched on, skipper.
All right, attention. Captain to crew. All hands square away to decelerate. Ship's beeper will, as usual, sound 10 times after light's dim.
Come on, Doc.
DC, bosun.
Aye, aye, sir. DC station. On the double.
The crewmen move to their DC stations.
Want to bounce through this one?
Each man moves onto his own small, circular platform and stands still. Once all the men are in position, a luminous green glow absorbs them, and they disappear into it. Now the interior of the ship changes colors, first to dark blue. Now green, fading to orange, then to red. The red colors seem to pulsate as we watch the ship's bridge compartment. Slowly, the lights return to normal. The green glow enveloping the men fades, and the men reappear on the platforms, but somewhat weakened. One man steps from his platform, rubbing the back of his neck. He nods to another man. As the crew moves back to their stations, the skipper takes a seat at the navigational computer. Several men silently gather around as the skipper studies the large model before them.
All right, we're down to point 3896 of light speed.
The skipper pushes some buttons and flips a switch.
Warm in here, skipper.
Yeah.
He looks from the model into the computer's video output scope. Through it, he sees a large star and several smaller specks near it.
Jerry
sits at the computer as the skipper gets up and turns on a monitor screen on a nearby wall.
There's Altair right on the nose, skipper.
The skipper looks over at Jerry. From outside the craft, the ship passes before a fully eclipsed star.
Meanwhile, this ship arranges its own eclipses.
The skipper and another crewman watch the eclipse in the monitor.
Jerry. Punch out an orbit on the fourth planet.
Aye, Skipper.
Jerry looks into the scope and presses several buttons.
Ship in approach, Skipper. Helical vector oriented.
Attention. Captain to crew, attention. Our destination, Altair 4, is now visible on the main view plate. As you'll recollect from your briefing lectures, this is an Earth-type planet. 20 years ago, the spacecraft Bellerophon landed here with a prospecting party of scientists. Our mission is to search for survivors. That is all.
The skipper puts the communicator device back in its wall-mounted cradle. Later, the skipper and another man watch a planet on the main view plate.
Lord sure makes some beautiful worlds.
How do these continents check with the old charts?
David will tell you better in a little while, Skipper. It's time for breaks.
Okay, take it away.
Astrogator to crew. Stand by to change flux.
Several men behind Jerry rise as we watch the model of the vessel tilt upward in the computer. Outside the vessel, it approaches a planet, moving closer and closer to its atmosphere.
Another one of them new worlds. No beer, no women, no pool parlors, nothing. Nothing to do but throw rocks at tin cans, and we got to bring our own tin cans.
Attention, Captain to crew, now hear this. We are now entering the atmosphere of Altair 4. No survival suits will be required upon landing. Oxygen content, 4.7 richer than Earth standard. Gravity, only 0.897. Adjust your equipment accordingly, that is all.
All hands, check equipment.
The men leave. An image of the planet rotates on the main view plate as they move closer and closer. Inside the ship...
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Not so far, sir.
The crewman looks back to his console and adjusts a knob.
Jerry, can you make out anything down there?
I may be missing some individual structures, but there are no cities, ports, roads, bridges, dams. There's just no sign of civilization at all.
The radio operator looks up suddenly.
Sir, we're being radar scanned.
Any zero on it?
No, sir, but it seems to emanate from an area of about 20 miles square.
20 miles square.
The commander looks at the operator.
Motion, class B alert.
Aye, aye, sir. Combat stations, blaster men, activate your scopes.
Radio contact, sir. There's a voice here.
Human?
Yes, sir. Sounds like it.
Boosted.
Spaceship, identify yourself. You're being tracked.
Cut me in, sir. United Planets cruiser C-57D, J.J. Adams commanding. Who are you?
Morbius of the Bellerophon.
Who?
Edward Morbius.
A crewman reads from a small device.
Yeah, here it is. Morbius E, PhD, Lit D, Expedition Philologist.
Philologist?
What do you wish here, cruiser?
Well, you don't understand, sir. We're your relief. We're very glad to find you alive.
I, of course, appreciate your concern, but absolutely no assistance of any sort is required.
Well, the red carpet treatment, huh?
Dr. Morbius, my orders are to survey the situation on Altair 4.
Let me repeat, I'm in no sort of difficulty here. Your best procedure will be to turn back at once without landing.
Sorry, sir.
Commander, if you set down on this planet, I warn you that I cannot be answerable for the safety of your ship or your crew.
If you'll just supply me with landing coordinates. Dr. Morbius, I require landing coordinates.
Very well, but I wash my hands of all responsibility. You have standard charts?
Yes, sir.
You may come in at 83, 17, 4 north, 148, 21 west.
Thank you.
Commander Adams slowly replaces the communicator on the wall.
It's right back there in the desert.
Commander, I strongly urge you to reconsider. Please permit me to recommend...
Something funny down there, Skipper.
Adams pauses to take a deep breath, then moves over to the computer with Jerry.
Okay, Jerry. I'll take her in.
Jerry gets up from the controls for the commander, who then speaks into a communicator before him.
Attention. Captain to crew, stand by to reverse polarity. Standard Class A security will be maintained upon landing. And until further notice, all hands will wear sidearms.
That is all.
Artificial gravity off.
Grab off.
Half flux.
Half flux.
Cut primary coils.
Primary's cut, sir.
From the surface of the planet, we watch as the spacecraft lowers toward the barren ground. Rocky peaks protrude from the otherwise flat terrain. A large white moon hangs in the dark horizon. The ship slows as it nears the ground. Inside, Jerry and the commander check the computer's readouts. Outside again, a conical blue light emanates from the bottom of the ship, and a leg extends for the ship to land on. Once down, two stairways drop from the ship to the ground, and three men, two of them armed, move down to the surface.
All clear, sir.
Commander Adams and a small group of crewmen head down the stairs to the surface of the planet. Once on the ground, Adams, flanked by two men, looks around the scene.
Look at the color of that sky.
Yeah, but I'll still take blue.
I don't know. I think a man could get used to this. Grow to love it.
Bosun.
Aye, sir.
You can assemble a tractor.
Aye, aye, sir.
Better check the command mic, Skipper.
Hmm?
Command mic, sir.
Oh, yeah. Good idea. Chief?
Sir?
You're on command now, Quinn. You keep right at those instruments.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, what's this dust coming?
A man points into the distance, where a dust cloud races across the ground.
Looks like we're being met.
Bosun!
Aye, aye, sir.
Hold the tractor.
Aye, aye, sir.
Quite a vehicle, huh? That driver must be a madman.
What driver?
A robot sits in the front of the small vehicle. It stops and the men pull blaster weapons from holsters at their sides, slowly approaching it for a better look. The robot's head turns to face them and they stop in their tracks. It disembarks the vehicle. Walks closer to Commander Adams and offers a small bow.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen. I am to transport you to the residence. If you do not speak English, I am at your disposal with 187 other languages along with their various dialects and sub-tongues.
Colloquial English will do fine, thank you. This is no offense, but you are a robot, aren't you?
That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
Nice climate you have here. High oxygen content.
I rarely use it myself, sir. It promotes rust.
Hey, Doc, is it a male or female?
In my case, sir, the question is totally without meaning. Will you get in, gentlemen?
Commander Adams adjusts his hat while the others share looks. Adams reaches for a device from his belt and brings it to his mouth.
Quinn. Track this. If I blink red...
I'll bring the tractor in a hurry, sir.
Right.
He puts the communicator back in his belt. Then he, Jerry, and the other crewman slowly walk toward Robbie's transport vehicle. Robbie watches them a moment, then gets into the driver's space.
Passengers will please fasten their seat belts.
The men fasten their belts.
Looks after us like a mother.
The vehicle pulls away. Now in the distance, the vehicle streams a long trail of dust behind it as it races across the barren ground. The scene changes, and a small building sits nestled in among rising rock spires. Robbie and the others arrive at the front of the building.
If you gentlemen will go in, you're expected.
Adams, Jerry, and the other crewmen leave Robbie's transport vehicle and move toward the front entrance.
I am Morbius.
I'm Commander Adams. This is Lieutenant Fireman, my executive, and Lieutenant Astro, our ship's doctor.
How ironic that a simple scholar with no ambition beyond a modest measure of seclusion should out of a clear sky find himself besieged by an army of fellow creatures, all grimly determined to be of service to him.
I'm sorry, sir, if we're not welcome, but we do have our orders.
But of course you must stay for lunch, gentlemen, and do forgive the ill manners of an old recluse. Won't you come in?
Morbius turns and enters the building. Adams and crew follow cautiously after him, removing their hats at the door. Later, they're seated at a table with Dr. Morbius eating.
Whatever that lunch was, it was certainly delicious.
Simply some of Robbie's synthetics.
He's your cook, too?
He even manufactures the raw materials. Come round here, Robbie. I'll show you how this works.
Robbie walks around the table to Morbius.
One introduces a sample of human food through this aperture. Down here, there's a small built-in chemical laboratory where he analyzes it. Later, he can reproduce identical molecules in any shape or quantity.
Well, it's a housewife's dream.
Plus, absolute selfless obedience. Activate the disposal unit.
Robbie turns, and a wall opens up behind him to reveal a small cylinder-shaped booth. Morbius throws a piece of fruit into it. The fruit vanishes.
A household disintegrator beam.
Put your arm in there.
Robbie advances on the disintegrator. Adams stands up.
Order canceled. Don't attribute feeling to him, gentlemen. Robbie is simply a tool. Tremendously strong, of course. He could quite easily topple his house off its foundation.
Or in the wrong hands, mightn't such a tool become a deadly weapon?
No, Doctor. Not even though I were the mad scientist of the tape thrillers, because, you see, there happens to be a built-in safety factor. Commander, may I borrow that formidable-looking sidearm of yours?
Adams hesitates, then removes the weapon and gives it to Morbius.
Thank you. Robbie, point this thing at that Althea Frutex out there on the terrace.
Robbie points the weapon.
Fire.
Robbie fires, and the shots disintegrate the small tree.
You understand the mechanism?
Yes, Morbius. A simple blaster.
All right. Now turn around here. Point it at the commander.
Robbie points the blaster at Adams, who unfolds his arms. Jerry and the other crewmen stand up.
Aim right between the eyes.
Adams stares at Morbius.
Fire.
The gears in Robbie's head turn, and blue sparks fly from them.
See? He's helpless. Locked in a sub-electronic dilemma between my direct orders and his basic inhibitions against harming rational beings. Canceled.
Morbius takes the blaster from Robbie.
If I were to allow that to continue, he would blow every circuit in his body.
He hands the blaster back to Adams, who holsters it.
Doctor, how did you come by such a mechanism?
I didn't come by him, Doctor. I tinkered him together during my first months up here.
Coffee is ready, sir.
Gentlemen.
Doctor, do you mean that you made this gentleman?
A useful enough toy, Lieutenant. But nowadays, I have no time for such things.
Dr. Morbius, you're a philologist, an expert in words and languages, their origins and meanings. Yet this robot of yours is beyond the combined resources of all Earth's physical science.
My dear Commander, maybe you overestimate both Robbie and myself. Gentlemen, let me show you another bit of parlor magic.
Morbius walks over to a table and waves his hand over a sensor. A series of wall plates encircle the building.
Forgive me, I didn't mean to alarm you, gentlemen. I had Robbie install the steel shutters before I realized how altogether safe I am here.
He runs his hand over the sensor, and the plating disappears.
Well, gentlemen, this has been very pleasant. You've seen how comfortable I am here. No hardships, no needs, and no need at all for military assistance. Now I dare say you're impatient to get back to base.
Yes, sir. The moment we've interviewed the other members of the Bellerophon party.
Others. But there are no others, Commander. Before the first year was out, they had all, every man and woman of them, succumbed to a sort of a planetary force here. Some dark, terrible, incomprehensible force. Only my wife and I were immune.
And just how do you account for your immunity, Dr. Marbius?
My wife and I differed from the others only in our special love for this new world, in our boundless longing to make a home here far from the scurry and strife of humankind. I remember how, when the vote was taken to return to Earth, she and I were utterly heartbroken. How could we have foreseen the extinction of so many co-workers and friends?
Skipper, there is no record of any wife on the Bellerophon rolls.
Oh, Lieutenant, look under biochemistry. Julia Marson. She and I were married by the skipper on the voyage here. I have the certificate.
I thought Robbie had managed some very charming feminine touches. I take it Mrs. Morbius isn't at home today.
My dear wife died a few months after the others. Only in her case, it was of natural causes.
I'm very sorry. Dr. Morbius, just what were the symptoms of all those other deaths? The unnatural ones, I mean.
The symptoms were striking, Commander. One by one, in spite of every safeguard, my co-workers were torn literally limb from limb.
By what?
By some devilish thing that never once showed itself.
And the Bellerophon?
Vaporized, as the three remaining survivors tried to take her off.
Adams leans back and regards Morbius coolly.
And yet, in all these 19 years, you personally have never again been bothered by this planetary force.
Only in nightmares of those times. And yet, always in my mind, I seem to feel the creature is lurking somewhere close at hand, sly and irresistible, and only waiting to be reinvoked for murder.
Father.
A young blonde-haired woman approaches.
Alta, I specifically asked you not to join us for lunch.
But Father, lunch is over. I'm sure you never said a word about not coming in for coffee. Well, did you or did you?
This is Commander Adams, Dr. Ostro, and Lieutenant Farmer, my daughter.
How do you do?
I always so terribly wanted to meet a young man, and now three of them at once.
That's very kind of you.
You're lovely, Doctor. Of course, the two end ones are unbelievable.
Could this end one get you some coffee?
Oh, I'm quite able to get it, thank you.
Jerry follows after her to the coffee pot, where Robbie is heating it.
Thank you.
Of course, you must make allowances for my daughter, gentlemen. She's never known any human being except her father.
I hope you'll make allowances too, sir. We young men have been shut up in hyperspace for well over a year now, and right from here, the view looks just like heaven. Sugar?
But you keep helping me. After all, you're not Robbie.
I wouldn't mind being Robbie in certain ways. That's only in certain ways, of course.
He smiles at her.
I can see that was probably very clever, but I don't seem to understand it.
Well, there's no rush.
Yes, I suppose one day I shall be obliged to make the trip to Earth with her for the sake of her natural development.
I should say fairly soon, too.
Your father wasn't too happy at first about your meeting us, was he?
Well, naturally not. You're from Earth.
What's wrong with Earth?
How lucky I am, though. All three of you are such very fine exceptions. Well, you are exceptions, aren't you?
Oh, sure, sure. Well, that is, I am, anyway. Old, dependable Jerry. Of course, the doc can be trusted, too, in the daytime.
What about the commander?
Well, I hate to tell you this, Alta, but that man is notorious throughout seven planetary systems.
Dear, what does he do?
Well, I don't feel free to discuss the shortcomings of a fellow officer, but girl or woman who lets him get her alone, anywhere.
Jerry shakes a finger in the air. She looks over her shoulder at the commander and doctor.
Yes. Yes, I can see it now. There. Just then when he looked at me, why, his eyes almost had fire in them. I'm so glad you don't have any fire in your eyes, Lieutenant.
Well, I'm not that harmless.
Alter.
Yes, Father.
She joins her father and takes his hand.
These gentlemen have expressed a very kindly concern over the amount of liberty you have here.
Liberty?
I've explained to them that you have my permission to visit Earth whenever you choose.
Earth? I?
Then my little girl never feels lonely or confined?
I don't know. I have you and Robbie and all my friends.
Friends?
Perhaps you better call them, my dear.
All right.
Come, gentlemen.
She walks outside, finds a device on her necklace, and blows into it. The doctor grabs his ear.
Felt something go right through my head.
Alter's whistle is above the pitch of human hearing. I often feel it myself.
As she stands outside, two small deer approach. She pets one. Morbius, Adams and his crewmen watch from inside. Now the deer both leave.
What's up?
Look.
A tiger approaches her now, and the commander and Jerry reach for their blasters.
Oh, no, no, no. Watch.
The tiger runs up to her and stops. Alta holds out her hand over its head.
He's as tame as a kitten.
Outside of the range of my daughter's influence, it's still a deadly wild beast.
The tiger leaves, and Alta sees it off.
Just a routine checkup from the ship. What, Chief?
Everything okay, Commander?
No problems.
Would you mind activating the viewer, sir?
He points the device around the room.
As you can see, we're under no restraint whatsoever.
He points it at Alta.
I knocked that off, Quinn.
Well, gentlemen, if I can be of any help to you in your preparations for the homeward voyage...
Well, thank you, sir, but unfortunately, circumstances may keep us here for a while.
Circumstances?
Yes, you see, my orders don't quite seem to cover the Bellerophon fatalities. I am forced now to contact base for new instructions.
But, Commander, suppose these new instructions require my return to Earth for questioning. 2 years or more away from my work here. Tell me just what is involved in your making contact with Earth base.
Well, fundamentally, it's a question of crude power.
Yeah.
How to short-circuit the continuum on a 5 or 6 parsec level. Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
No.
To build one, we'd have to cannibalize about 2/3 of the ship's electronic gear and then unship the main drive to juice it. Just to construct a bunker to house the core would take about 10 days.
Disabled here for 10 days and nights. Tell me, would 2-inch lead shielding do as well?
Be better if we happen to be carrying about 100 square yards of this stuff.
And I'll have Robbie run it off for you, and you'll get it not later than tomorrow noon.
Most very obliging of you, sir.
Obliging. Look out there, Commander. The Bellerophon party. 19 years ago, I dug those graves with my own hands. And I have, believe me, no wish to repeat that experience.
Adams looks at Morbius. Then they both look over their shoulders and move back into the building. Alta escorts the doctor and lieutenant to the front door.
Well, we'll see you again soon, Alta, I hope. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Excellent lunch, Doctor.
To tell the truth, I sometimes still miss the conversation of such gentlemen as yourself, Doctor.
Well, thank you for your courtesy and concern, sir.
Alta hands Adams his hat, and they reboard Robbie's transport outside.
Fasten your seatbelts, gentlemen.
They pull away. Morbius and Alta watch them go from the front doorway. Alta is smiling brightly. Back at the ship, two men stand guard at the bottom of the stairway. Two more crewmen are walking toward the ship from the perimeter. Later.
Be easy with this, Cork. Rimkeep coils won't take us home without it.
Come on, Cookie, get out of the way. You want to get run over?
Well, they've been like that too much.
Handle it gently. It has to get us home.
I'm glad that bag Cork's carrying instead of us.
Hey, you think it's far enough away from the ship?
Sure, no interference there.
What about the magnetic pull?
Bosun, just drop the thing down right over there.
Aye, aye, sir.
Robbie and Alta arrive in the transport. Robbie has the bulky plates of shielding in his hand.
Where do you wish the shielding stacked, sir?
Well, you can just put it right over there by the core. Thank you. Wait a minute. That's solid lead he's carrying.
Common lead would have crushed the vehicle, sir. This is my morning's run of isotope 217. The whole thing hardly comes to 10 tons.
Dr. Ostro and Commander Adams share a look.
Hello, Elder. Does your father know you're out here?
Did tell me not to go near the ship. After all, this isn't very near.
All right, Cookie, out of here.
All right, sir. Yes, sir.
Cookie salutes as he tucks a woolen steel cleaning pad into a back pocket, then turns to watch the men. Adams motions to the mag truck pilot and points to Cookie's pocket. The pilot nods and turns on the magnet. It pulls Cookie off his feet and onto the magnet, pocket first.
Commander! Put me down, sir!
Adams waves to Cookie.
Commander.
What is it, Chief?
You'd like to check my final assembly for the monitor unit of the Klystron transmitter.
What, already?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
They move over to the transmitter.
Are these condensers out of my accelerator circuits?
Yes, sir. And I borrowed some solenoids from your gyro stabilizers, too. But here's the big deal, sir. I'll bet any quantum mechanic in the service would give the rest of his life for a chance to fool around with this gadget.
Well, you better get this in the ship by dock. Won't do any good to have some fool fall over before we transmit tomorrow. Good work, Quinn.
Thank you, sir.
Later, Cookie is with Robbie.
Psst. Come here. Over here.
Cookie looks around as Robbie approaches.
Can I be of service, sir?
Look, never mind the sir, mister, but I'm a stranger in this so-called planet. I was just wondering if you could tell me where I could get a hold of some of the real stuff.
Real stuff?
Just for cooking purposes, you understand. I take a big pride in my duties.
Pardon me, sir. Stuff?
Oh.
He reaches into his shirt, pulls out a bottle, unscrews the top, and takes a swig.
Just about one jolt left. Oh, genuine ancient rocket bourbon. See here?
Robbie takes the bottle and pours the contents into his mouth.
Well, you low-living contraption, I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
Cookie watches as the gears in Robbie's head turn.
Yes, relatively simple alcohol molecules with traces of fusel oil. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Gallons? Mister, I've been from here to there in this galaxy, and I just want you to know you're the most understanding soul I ever met up with.
Cookie slaps Robbie's back.
Ow!
Elsewhere in the woods, Jerry's with Alta.
It's nothing really personal. Just a kiss.
But why should people want to kiss each other?
Oh, it's an old custom. All of the really high civilizations go in for it.
But it's so silly.
But it's good for you, though. It stimulates the whole system. As a matter of fact, you can't be in tip-top health without it.
Really? I didn't know that.
I'd be only too happy to show you.
Well, thank you very much, Lieutenant.
No trouble at all.
He touches Alta's chin as he moves closer, then kisses her on the lips. He steps back and looks at her.
Is that all there is to it?
Well, you've sort of got to stick with it.
She nods and he kisses her again. He steps back and looks at her.
Just once more, do you mind?
Not at all.
He kisses her on the lips and wraps his arms around her.
I don't know, Lieutenant. There must be something seriously the matter with me, because honestly, I haven't noticed the least bit of stimulation.
Honey, let's do this thing right. Here.
He puts her arms around his waist, then wraps his arms around her and gives her another kiss. As they kiss, Commander Adams appears behind them. Jerry stops kissing her, steps back and looks at her.
You giving me the treatment? Are you?
Lieutenant Farman.
Don't say a word, sir. I know there are a lot of pressing duties waiting for me back at the ship, and rank doth have its little privileges, sir?
And you can depend on it, Lieutenant, that those privileges won't be stretched to taking your kind of advantages.
Oh, but I...
Dismissed.
Jerry turns and smiles at Alta, then hurries away.
What's the matter with him? Why did he leave? Why did you both act so funny?
Well, what'd you expect?
Well, don't you understand, Alta?
Adams shakes his head.
Well, look at yourself. You see, you can't run around like that in front of men, particularly not a space wolf like Farman. So for Pete's sake, go home and put on something that'll, anything.
Alta looks at the ground.
What's wrong with my clothes? I designed them myself.
Adams takes a deep breath.
Stop looking at me that way. I don't think I like it. What do you mean, Commander, the lieutenant and I were just trying to get a little healthy stimulation from hugging and kissing, that's all.
Oh, that's all. It's so easy for you, isn't it? There's no feelings, no emotions. You, nothing human would ever enter your mind. Well, it so happens that I'm in command of 18 competitively selected super-perfect physical specimens with an average age of 24.6 who have been locked up in hyperspace for 378 days. It would have served you right if I hadn't... And he... Oh, go on. Get out of here before I ever run out of the area under guard. And then I'll put more guards in the guards.
He turns away from her. She stands still a moment, a defiant look on her face, then turns and hurries away. The commander watches her go. Later, Alta is with her father.
And then I'll put more guards on the guards. I don't like him. I just don't like him. The way he kept looking at me, and he shouted.
What about?
I don't know. I don't know, really. It was awful. I was only trying to be nice about kissing the lieutenant.
Oh? How did the commander react to that?
Well, he was furious. He seemed to think that all that about biology had something to do with me. Personally, I mean. I've never been so nervous in all my life. And I hope I don't see him again if I live to be 400 million.
Well, I dare say you won't have to. I think the best thing you can do is to go to bed. I still have some work to do in my study. Good night, my dear.
Good night.
Dr. Morbius leaves the room. Alta goes to a beamer and waves her hand over it. She looks around, then does it again. Robbie enters the room.
Ben, I've beamed and beamed.
Sorry, miss. I was giving myself an oil job. And what is it you require this time, Miss Alta?
Robbie, I must have a new dress right away.
Again?
Oh, but this one must be different. Absolutely nothing must show. Below, above, or through.
Radiation proof?
No, just eye proof will do.
Thick and heavy?
Oh, no, Robbie. It must be the loveliest, softest thing you've ever made for me. And fit in all the right places, with lots and lots of star sapphires.
Star sapphires take a week to crystallize properly. Would diamonds or emeralds do?
Well, if they're large enough.
5, 10, and 15 carats, and on hand. I will run the dress up for you in time for breakfast.
Alta smiles brightly and gives Robbie a hug. Huh?
Sleep well, miss.
Thank you, Robbie. I don't really care now whether I do or not.
She leaves the room, and Robbie leaves the way he entered. Later, outside the ship.
Funny to see two moons in the sky, isn't it?
Funny how quick a guy gets used to it.
Yeah.
They stand watching the sky.
Joe,
what?
Do you hear something?
Like what?
Like a sort of big breathing.
No.
It's funny. I did.
moved by the guards and toward the stairs into the ship. Inside, several men are sleeping in bunk beds. A hatch opens near them. And one of the men wakes up. He looks around, then puts his head back down. Now the transmitter moves seemingly all by itself. Later.
Strong and Gray, last night during your watch, this ship was entered and valuable government property was sabotaged. Now, the two of you claim to have been at your posts and awake. Yet this ship was entered, the heavy-duty hatch was raised and latched back. And neither of you saw or heard anything. Except you, Gray, you heard breathing. And Youngerford, let me see, you were asleep in your bunk. And you think you had a dream. Pending further evidence, you're deprived of space pay and all privileges.
Well, me too, sir?
No, me too, sir, will stand 20 extra watches. I'll have less dreaming aboard this ship. Dismissed.
They turn in unison and leave.
Skipper, come on. Well, Quinn.
About half of this gear we can replace out of stores, and the rest we can patch up one way or another. Except this special Klystron frequency modulator. Now, with every facility of the ship, I think I might be able to rebuild it, but frankly, the book says no. It came packed in liquid-borne in a suspended gravity.
All right, so it's impossible. How long will it take?
Well, if I don't stop for breakfast.
Adams looks up at Quinn and smiles.
All right, get on it, Quinn.
Thank you, sir.
Outside the ship, a man exits the mag truck as the commander approaches.
Tractor's ready, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
Hey, half a minute, Skipper. I'll change into a clean uniform.
No, you better stay as you are. I'm leaving you in command here.
Oh, I see.
Establish the standard perimeter, set up a Class A alert. I want them enforced by sundown.
Aye, aye, sir.
Adams looks at Jerry, then gets in the truck with the doctor. They pull away as Jerry rubs his hands together. At the Morbius residence, Robbie has a bouquet of flowers as he enters. A small monkey enters from outside and gets on the table near the fruit bowl. It picks out a piece of fruit as Robbie sets the flowers down. Robbie fires a greenish bolt at the monkey, who is thrown from the table and quickly runs outside. As Robbie finishes with the flowers, the commander and doctor arrive.
Good morning, gentlemen.
We'd like to see Dr. Morbius.
Morbius is in his study, sir. Never to be disturbed while that door is closed.
Robbie points toward the door.
All right, we'll wait.
Commander Adams and Dr. Ostro move toward the door.
Is there any other way out of there?
This is the only door. In case you require anything, gentlemen, use the beamer.
Adams points to the beamer as Robbie leaves.
How could he have slipped past two sentries?
Adams spots Alta in the pool outside.
Nothing important, Skipper.
Look, Doc, you stay right there where you are and keep your eye on that door.
Okay, Skipper, and if Morbius comes out, we'll call you from right here.
Adams nods, then shoots Ostro a look before going out to the pool area. He walks to the edge of the pool and watches Alta swim.
Morning!
Morning.
She submerges again, and he hurries around the side of the pool.
Bring my bathing suit.
What's a bathing suit?
He stops in his tracks.
Oh, murder.
Never mind. Coming out.
She gets out of the pool.
Now, Alta, listen. You mustn't...
You just wait right there. It'll take me a second to get dry.
Yes, well, I'll just turn my back here.
Well, that's the way you feel about it. Well, go Don't worry, you're not going to have to look at me anymore from now on.
Hmm?
You'll see.
See what?
You'll see what.
She smiles.
Now, wait a minute, Alan. Now, if you're planning on,
You know, I sure didn't expect to see you today after the way you spoke to me yesterday.
She smiles, and he smiles with his back turned.
I'm very sorry about the way I spoke to you yesterday, Alan. I was sort of bothered.
Hmm.
Alta raises her eyebrows, then drapes a necklace around her neck.
All right. You can look now.
He turns around to see her in a long white dress.
Shows through, does it?
Mm-hmm.
I had it made especially for you.
Oh, I thought you weren't expecting me today.
I wasn't. I don't know. I guess just something about me personally you don't like.
Alta.
He moves closer to her.
You always look just beautiful.
Then why don't you kiss me like everybody else does?
Everybody. Hasn't your father taught you anything at all?
Well, he says I'm terribly ignorant, but I have had poetry and mathematics, logic, physics, geology, and by...
Ology? Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
Well, so far.
Huh?
What's wrong with theory?
They look into each other's eyes for a long moment. Then the commander holds her by the arms.
Miss.
He kisses her. She puts her arms around his neck, and he hugs her closer. Tiger appears on a ledge over the pool.
That's all right, he's my friend.
The tiger snarls, and Adams keeps his hand on the palm of his holstered blaster. The tiger suddenly lunges off the ledge toward them, and Adams quickly draws, vaporizing it in midair. Alta looks surprised, and Adams reholsters his blaster.
I'm sorry, Alta. I had to do that.
But he didn't recognize me. He would have killed me. Why?
Adams grabs her shoulders.
You really don't know, do you?
No. I don't.
He looks into her eyes, then hugs her. She hugs him back. Later, Adams joins Ostro outside the lab door.
Is he still in there? Hasn't come out. Wait a minute, Skipper. After all, it is his house. What's the matter?
Doc, something new has been added.
He motions toward Alta outside.
Oh. That's going to complicate things a bit.
Yeah.
Adams turns and faces the lab door, then walks up to it. It opens, and he steps back. He slowly enters the room. A desk sits at one end. Behind it, a picture of the galaxy.
Not even a window. Robot lied. Mobius hasn't been in here. Doc, he's up to something. Look at this, Skipper.
He points to forms on the desk.
Hieroglyphics? Maybe. But it doesn't look like Egyptian, or cuneiform, or Chinese.
A wall panel behind them slides open, revealing Dr. Morbius.
You'll find the household silver in the dining room and my daughter's jewelry on her dressing table.
Dr. Morbius, last night our Klystron monitor was sabotaged.
And you suspect me? Then the time has come for clarification. Sit down.
He motions to the chairs before the desk. Adams and Ostro sit down, and Morbius looks at the form on his desk.
In times long past, this planet was the home of a mighty and noble race of beings, which called themselves the Krell. Ethically, as well as technologically, They were a million years ahead of humankind. For in unlocking the mysteries of nature, they had conquered even their baser selves. And when in the course of eons they had abolished sickness and insanity and crime and all injustice, they turned, still with high benevolence, outward toward space. Long before the dawn of man's history, they had walked our Earth and brought back many biological specimens.
I see. That explains the tiger and the deer.
The heights they had reached. But then, seemingly on the threshold of some supreme accomplishment, which was to have crowned their entire history, this all but divine race perished in a single night. In the 2,000 centuries since that unexplained catastrophe, even their cloud-piercing towers of glass and porcelain and adamantine steel have crumbled back into the soil of Altair IV, and nothing, absolutely nothing, remains above ground.
What were they like?
No record of their physical nature has survived, except perhaps in the form of this characteristic arch. I suggest you consider it in comparison to one of our functionally designed human doorways.
They look at the triangle-shaped doorway as Dr. Morbius walks around his desk and inserts a small crystal into a device.
That recording was made by Krell musicians 500,000 years ago. Now, if you will follow me, I will show you some of their other remaining artifacts.
Adams and Ostro follow Morbius into a secret Krell tunnel. They walk down a hallway and through several of the triangle-shaped doorways into a chamber.
Krell metal. Try your blaster there, Commander.
Adams points his blaster at a metal door and fires several shots. Each shot is absorbed into the metal. He runs up to inspect the wall.
This spot should be molten.
It's not even warm, huh? And no trace of radioactivity. The molecules are many times more densely interlocked than in earthly steel, yet it drinks up energy like a sponge.
Morbius manipulates a device which opens a series of metal doors. Then walks through them into a large chamber.
This is just one of their laboratories. You'll notice that much of the equipment is familiar, though designed for non-human technicians.
Adams and Ostro look around the alien lab at the different equipment.
What's this?
On this screen may be projected the total scientific knowledge of the Krell from its primitive beginning to the day of its annihilation, a sheer bulk surpassing many million earthly libraries.
You're able to read this?
A little, it's my profession. 20 years ago, I began here with this page of geometrical theorems. Eventually, I was able to deduce most of their huge logical alphabet. I began to learn. The first practical result was that robot of mine, which you gentlemen appear to find so remarkable. Child's play. I've come here every day now for 2 decades, painfully picking up a few of the least difficult fragments of their knowledge.
A thing like this, it's too big to evaluate. Think what a discovery of this kind.
Dr. Morbius, what is this device over here?
I call it their plastic educator. As far as I can make out, they used it to condition and test their young. In much the same way as we once employed finger painting among our kindergarten children. I often play with it myself for relaxation. Although working here, I sometimes wish I'd been blessed with multiple arms and legs.
He sits at the device.
Now, you can see that this headset was designed for something much bulkier than my human cranium.
He attaches the headset to his head.
Now, over here you see the electromagnetic waves of my brain sending that indicator up about halfway. I gather that one of their own young, comparable to a 7-year-old child, was normally expected to send that all the way to the top, which by Krell standards classifies me as a low-grade moron. Yet I have an officially recorded IQ of 183. Now then, for the primary function. Actually, to operate, well, I'll choose a familiar subject to start with to save time.
Ostro and Adams look at the control console of the device.
There, Matt, gentlemen.
An image appears in the device's display screen.
What's that? What's happening there?
The image becomes human-like, then changes again.
A statue?
The form takes the shape of Alto.
That's Altera.
Simply a three-dimensional image, Commander.
But it's alive.
Because my daughter is alive in my brain from microsecond to microsecond, while I manipulate. There. Something of a strain.
Aladdin's lamp in a physics laboratory.
Would you gentlemen care to take the Krell test of your intelligence?
Yes, very much.
You may be disappointed, Commander. Suppose we start with a good doctor.
What do I do?
Just sit down there, and I'll move a little forward. That's it. There now. Now, Doctor, you can read it here.
Well, there's something wrong here. I have an IQ of 161, yet I don't register a third what you did.
Now the Commander.
Ostro stands, and Adams sits at the device.
It's all right, sir. A commanding officer doesn't need brains, just a good loud voice, huh?
How do I make an image? I just pull this switch.
No, it's gone. You'd never survive. Our Bellerophon skipper tried it, and it was instantly fatal to him.
Oh, I see. So you're immune to this, too.
In my first attempt at creating an image here, my brain pattern there was scarcely any larger than yours. Afterwards, I lay unconscious for a day and a night.
And yet you came back for a second go at it.
It was a question of science, Doctor. But you can imagine my joy when I discovered that the shock had permanently doubled my intellectual capacity. Otherwise, my researches here would have come to nothing, poor as they have been. Recently, I have turned up some rather puzzling indications that in those final days before their annihilation, the Krell had been applying their entire racial energies to a new project, one which they actually seemed to hope might somehow free them once and for all from any dependence on physical instrumentalities.
Civilization without instrumentalities?
Incredible.
Dr. Morbius, everything here is new. Not a sign of age or wear on any of it.
Young man, these devices, self-serviced, self-maintained, have stood exactly as you see them for 2,000 centuries.
2,000 centuries. And during all this time, what was the power source?
That's a very good question. May I draw your attention to these gauges all around here, gentlemen? Their calibrations appear to indicate that they are set in decimal series, each division recording exactly 10 times as many amperes as the one preceding it. 10 times 10 times 10 times 10 times 10 times 10, on and on and on, row after row, gauge after gauge. But there is no direct wiring that I can discover. However, when I activate this machine, it registers infinitesimally, you see, down there in the lower left-hand corner. And then, when I activate the educator here, it registers a little more.
But this much is negligible. The total potential here must be nothing less than astronomical.
Nothing less. The number 10 raised almost literally to the power of infinity. Gentlemen, would you care to see some more of the Krell wonders?
Indeed, yes.
If you will, step in the shuttle car.
They move through a hatch into the shuttle car. Inside it, they sit down and Dr. Morbius points to the window at the front of the car, through which a long tunnel can be seen.
How often the Krell technicians have ridden in this little vehicle.
What now, Dr. Morbius?
Prepare your minds for a new scale of physical scientific values, gentlemen.
The car accelerates down the tunnel. Later, the three of them walk along a bridge going through a massive chamber filled with moving parts and energy discharges. To one side of the bridge, a crystal device moves up and down a track. They hesitantly look over the ledge. The ground below is out of sight.
Levels.
Morbius points up, and the ceiling is out of sight.
And 400 other shafts, like this one.
They walk back along the bridge. Another vast chamber. A large device flickers with light as it comes away. The three men walk along a pathway toward it.
Yes, a single machine. View 20 miles on each side. For 2,000 centuries, it has waited patiently here, tuning and lubricating itself, replacing worn parts. I have reason to believe that 16 years ago, a minor alteration was performed throughout the entire 8,000 cubic miles of its own fabric.
But what's it all for?
Sometimes the gauges register a little when the buck deer fight in the autumn or when the birds fly over in the spring. And nearly a whole dial became active when your ship first approached from deep space. I'll show you a section of one of the power units.
They follow Morbius.
These units are sunk in the body of the planet, 50 miles right below our feet. Now, be sure and look only in the mirror. Man does not behold the face of the Gorgon and live.
Morbius turns a wheel, and a screen flickers to life, filled with quickly moving particles. They look into the mirror image of that.
9,200 thermonuclear reactors intact. The harnessed power of an exploding planetary system.
He looks at them, then turns the wheel back. At the ship.
All hands, stand clear of fence area. All right, Quinn, turn it on.
Have you tested it yet, Bosun?
Right away, sir.
Bosun leans over and grabs a branch off the ground. He tosses it into the fence, and it vaporizes. Bosun nods.
There you are, sir.
Very good.
Bosun leaves, and Jerry turns around just as Cookie is approaching him.
Lieutenant, having completed my washing up duties after chow, I request the lieutenant's permission to take a little walk outside the perimeter, sir.
There's nothing out there.
But there is, sir. I mean, well, I thought it might brighten the boys' mess up a little bit, you know, if I could find a few wild radishes or something.
Look, Cookie, I don't know what you're lying about, but you better get back here before the skipper checks in, or we'll both be skinned.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Quinn, this is Farman. Kill the power on the fence.
Cookie goes through the fence.
All right, put it back on.
Cookie hurries off. Later, he winds his way through some rocks and trips. He looks up with a look of surprise on his face as he sees a huge pile of bottles before him. He crawls closer to them.
480 pipes. as you requested. Total, 60 gallons.
Genuine Kansas City bourbon.
Cookie takes a big swig from a bottle.
You're smooth, too.
He takes another swig, then stands up before Robbie.
Robbie, I ain't never gonna forget this. Anytime you're hard up for a couple of gallons of lubald, you just let me know.
Cookie begins to fill his pockets with the bottles. Robbie turns his torso to the side.
What's up? Somebody coming this way?
No, sir. Nothing coming this way.
Cookie resumes filling his pockets. Outside the ship, a nearby crewman watches as something tries to get through the fence. Other crewmen run to investigate.
Shall I shut down the current, sir?
No. No, it's stopped now. We'll check over the whole system first thing in the morning.
Aye, sir.
They disperse. Near the fence line, a footprint appears in the sand. Then another, moving past the fence toward the ship. The footprints lead to the stairs into the ship now. The stairs warp as we move up them.
Strange how that fence just shorted out.
Yeah.
Bosun and Jerry run toward the scream. Later, with Morbius.
You're too arbitrary, Commander. Perhaps I do not choose to be dictated to in my own world.
Dr. Morbius, a scientific find of this magnitude has got to be taken under United Planet supervision. No one man can be allowed to monopolize it.
For the past 2 hours, I've been expecting you to make exactly that asinine statement. Just one moment, Commander. For close on 20 years now, I've been constantly, and I hope dispassionately, considering this very problem. And I have come to the unalterable conclusion that man is unfit as yet to receive such knowledge, such almost limitless power.
Whereas Morbius, with his artificially expanded intellect, is now ideally suited to administer this power for the whole human race.
Precisely, Doctor. Such portions, then, of the Krell science as I may from time to time deem suitable and safe, I shall dispense to Earth. Other portions I shall withhold. And in this, I shall be answerable exclusively to my own conscience and judgment.
Dr. Morbius, in the absence of special instructions, you leave me in a very awkward position.
Commander. Commander Adams.
Speaking, Lieutenant.
Skipper, the chief's been murdered.
Quinn murdered?
Yes, he was alone, working on the monitor. The rest of us were all outside on guard duty.
How was it done?
Done? Skipper, his body is plastered all over the communications room.
All right, leave everything as it is. We're on our way.
Adams puts the communicator back on his belt. Morbius just stares off unmoving. Alta steps aside, allowing Adams and Ostro to pass. Dr. Morbius slowly sits at his desk as Alta enters the lab.
Let's start it again.
In the ship, Dr. Ostro places a large wrapped object on a table in front of the commander.
Is that it? I'm trying to make the plastic model from the footprints we found.
He pulls the plastic tarp off of the object, revealing the mold of a large clawed foot.
37 inches by 19.
That's fantastic.
Adams bends over the table to look at the mold.
Doc, I don't understand. Whatever walks on this would be quite an opponent for a man with a club, but without kind of weapons, Quinn could have knocked
this... No, Skipper. This thing runs counter to every known law of adaptive evolution.
What do you mean?
Well, notice this structure here. Characteristic of a four-footed animal. Yet our visitor last night left the tracks of a biped. Primarily a ground animal, too. Yet this claw could only belong to an arboreal creature like some impossible tree sloth. Just doesn't fit into normal nature. Anywhere in the galaxy, this is a nightmare.
Is that what you made out of that footprint, Doc?
I think it's fairly close.
Pardon me, Commander. Are you ready to hold discipline on the cook, sir?
Yeah, let's have them.
Jerry motions to Cookie, who joins them.
I'm obliged to remind you, sir, that I gave him permission to go out last night.
Did you give him permission to get falling down drunk?
Drunk, sir? Me, sir? Well, that's Dr. Ostro, sir. 4 pints of 120 proof bourbon without a trace of hangover in it. Now, that ain't natural, sir. Besides, why'd that Robert argue me into drinking all that whiskey in the first place?
You were with the robot last night?
Yes, sir. Him and me, we kind of got to toasting each other's good health. Just for cordial interplanetary relations, you understand?
Now, that's all the time. It's even while the chief was being killed.
Well, certainly, sir. I hope you don't think I could have got that stiff in 5 minutes.
Adams looks at Ostro.
All right, dismissed.
Cookie looks at Jerry, who motions him out, then follows.
Well, I guess that kind of washes the robot up. Where does that leave us for suspects? Maybe it leaves us with the same one. Maybe you and I ought to drop over to that Krell laboratory and get our IQs boosted a couple of 100%.
Sir, burial detail is ready.
Oh.
Outside.
Ashes to ashes. Dust to dust.
The captain throws a handful of dirt into the grave.
Dismissed.
Company dismissed.
The men fall out, putting their hats back on their heads as they leave. Commander Adams walks with Dr. Ostro.
Fine technician. Good shipmate.
And that's a good epitaph for any man.
Adams sees Morbius with Robbie and Alta next to their transport. He approaches Dr. Morbius.
Good day, Dr. Morbius.
I dare say neither of us slept any last night.
That's a pretty close guess.
I warned you while your ship was still in space. I begged you not to land on this planet. Believe me, Commander, that is only a foretaste. The Bellerophon pattern is being woven again. Remain here, and the next attack on your party will be more deadly and general.
How do you know that?
No, I seem to visualize it. If you wish, call it a premonition.
Morbius turns and gets back into the transport. Adams moves to stand next to Dr. Ostro as Robbie pilots the transport with Dr. Morbius and his daughter away.
What do you make of that, Skipper? I'd say it sounded like an ultimatum.
Bosun.
Aye, sir.
Later.
Bosun.
Aye, aye, sir.
I want a clear field of fire in all directions.
Aye, aye, sir.
Randall?
Sir?
How soon will radar be operational?
Operating right now, sir.
Good. You keep right on it yourself.
Aye, aye, sir.
Then A alert is completed?
Aye, aye, sir.
Fine. Activate main batteries.
Adams watches as the two blaster turrets come to life.
Alarm for test.
Several perimeter guards move outside the firing arc of the blaster turrets.
Fire!
Blue pulses of energy firing from the 4 different ports in the turret fly out over the fence and into a distant mountain wall.
Check good.
He puts the communicator back in his belt and makes his way to Jerry.
Well, Lieutenant, you got your trouble squad in hand?
Yes, sir, they're in hand, but they're a little trigger happy. They're sort of edgy to see whatever's out there.
Oh, Jerry.
Jerry faces the commander.
Look, this may be a big deal coming up. I'm sorry if I've leaned on you at all. You've got to understand that...
Stop knocking yourself out, Skipper. She picked the right man.
Oh. What is it, Randall?
Sir, radar just picked up something.
Where are we?
At the head of the Arroyo.
Moving?
This way, sir, slowly.
Adams moves around a turret, still holding his communicator.
Automatic control.
The turrets focus in one direction.
Batteries. Fire.
The turrets fire long pulses of blue energy into the distance.
Hold fire. You see anything out there, Doc?
Nothing.
Batteries. Fire.
Face mask. Randall.
Dead on target, sir.
Good. Give me audio comm.
Aye, aye, sir.
Now, attention. This may have been a ruse to divert us from some other part of the perimeter. You men will continue watching on your own immediate fronts. That is all.
Jerry motions the perimeter guards back into position. Adams and Ostro study the horizon.
What?
It just stopped at the foot of the pass.
Are you sure you've got a real blip there?
Big as a house, sir, and we were dead on target with both bursts. It's coming on again.
Straight across?
It shows here. It's still coming!
Gray, Strong, set up a crossfire on those rocks.
Gray and Strong run for the rocks. Jerry joins the commander and doctor. And more armed men arrive. We pan across the horizon. Deep shadows from tall mountains fall across the land. As the men are scanning the horizon, the fence lights up, and the turrets open up on the spot.
Get to the blasted things invisible!
The outline of the creature becomes more visible as they fire. Roughly dog-like, outlined in red. All the crewmen continue to fire their blasters at it. Strong and Gray move in closer. They're both swiped down by the giant creature's paw. Jerry rushes toward the beast. He's picked up and thrown down. In the Krell lab, Dr. Morbius weeps at a table. Many of the energy indicators behind him are lit up, showing a massive use of energy. Outside at the ship, the creature fades and disappears. Dr. Morbius runs out of the lab.
Alter! Altura! Alter! Alter, where are you?
Father!
What is it? What's the matter?
I just had a terrible dream.
What?
It was blood and fire and thunder and something awful was moving in the middle of it. I could hear it roar and bellow.
No, no, no. You know a dream can't hurt you.
Not me. Not us. The thing I saw was trying to break in the cab. It was going to kill... Oh, you'll take care of him for me, won't you, Father? You'll protect him.
My darling, I'm completely helpless as long as he remains here so willfully. Come now.
At the ship, the men are checking their weapons.
Bosun.
Yes, sir.
Get those graves dug. Keep the men busy.
Right. The busier, the better.
Randall, give me audio comm. Well, man, whatever it was, our main battery stopped it.
You believe that?
No, it just went away for some reason. It'll be back. Doc, an invisible being that cannot be disintegrated by atomic fission.
Oh, Skipper. That is a scientific impossibility.
Hypnotic illusions don't tear people apart.
That's true enough. But any organism dense enough to survive 3 billion electron volts would have to be made of solid nuclear material. But it'd sink of its own weight to the center of this planet.
Well, you saw it yourself, standing right there in those neutron beams.
And there's your answer. It must have been renewing its molecular structure from one microsecond to the next.
Bosun!
Aye, sir.
I want the tractor.
Ready, sir.
So now we just pick up the girl and her father, whether they like it or not, huh?
Section 86A. Evacuate all civilians from disaster areas.
You left out two very important words. Where feasible. Now, if you remember the Bellerophon expedition,
The ship was vaporized trying to lift off.
Which makes it a guilt-edged priority that one of us gets into that Krell lab and takes that brain boost.
Bosun!
Aye, sir.
I'm leaving you in command. Get the ship operational. Do your best to wait it out for me and the doctor. But the second that fence starts to short again, you lift off and report back to Earth base on conditions in this sector.
Right, Skipper.
Ostro and Adams board the mag truck. Ostro hands Bosun a small box before getting in.
All right. Get everything aboard ship. We're pulling out.
Later, at the Morbius estate, Adams and Ostro arrive in the mag truck. They climb out of the vehicle and look at the front door to the home.
No lights showing.
Yeah. Look, Doc, in case we make it into that lab, I'll take the first go at the IQ booster. You hear me?
I hear you.
Ostro nods. Adams slowly leads them to the front door, which quickly opens as they near it. Robbie is on the other side.
I am monitored to admit no one at this hour.
Well, that sounded final.
Maybe if we reasoned with him.
Ostro and Adams look at each other, then slowly reach for their blasters.
My beams are focused on your blasters, gentlemen.
Adams and Ostro try to draw, but Robbie fires faster, nullifying their weapons. They put them back in their holsters.
Hasn't he got a built-in rule against wringing our little necks for us?
That is true, sir. Yet I am monitored to admit no one.
Robbie, let them in.
Alta, this is your father's order. Now, get out of the way.
Quiet. Robbie, emergency cancellation, Archimedes.
Robbie turns and exits the doorway. Adams hugs Alta as he and Ostro enter the house.
Why are you here?
We were attacked. Three more men dead, including Jerry Farman.
Alta looks down. Doc glances back, then hurries down the secret Krell hallway from Morbius's lab.
I don't know. It was just some kind of big outline in the disintegrator beams. And you can't explain it.
No.
Well, anyway, we fought it. And we lost. I figure it'll be back.
You must leave now.
Darling, I'm not going without you.
But I can't possibly leave him alone. I just can't.
Then we'll take him.
By force. I can't agree to that either.
Can't you? You don't realize what's loose on this planet.
But I'm immune, like both my parents.
That's what he says. I don't believe it. Nothing could be immune to that thing.
Darling, darling, please go.
She hugs, then kisses him.
Please, please, if you love me, go.
Doc, will you talk some sense to this girl? I'm in over my head.
Doc?
Doc? Doc?
Robbie holds a limp Doc in his arms.
On the sofa, Robbie.
Robbie carefully places Doc on the sofa. Adams hurries to help. Doc looks warily at Adams and has a red mark on his forehead.
So you took the brain boost, huh?
You ought to see my new mind. Up there in lights. Bigger than his now.
Easy, Doc.
Morbius was too close to the problem. The Krell had completed the project. Big machine. No instrumentalities. True creation.
Come on, Doc. Let's have it.
But the Krell forgot one thing.
Yes, what?
Monsters, John. Monsters from the Id.
The Id? What's that? Doc, Doc.
Ostro slowly slumps in Adam's arms.
Doc.
Adam stands, and Alta holds him.
How romantic.
Morbius moves toward Ostro's body. He checks his pulse.
The fool, the meddling idiot. As though his ape's brain could contain the secrets of the Krell.
Father, he's dead.
He was warned, and now he's paid. Let him be buried with the other victims of human greed and folly.
Adams and Alta stare at Dr. Morbius.
Morbius, you wanted me to make a choice. Now you've chosen for me.
Alta!
I'm ready to go with you, darling.
Altera, go!
I will place him in the tractor, sir.
Thank you.
She mustn't do this. She must be prevented.
Morbius, what is the id?
Young man, my daughter is planning a very foolish action, and she'll be terribly punished.
What is the id?
Id. It's an obsolete term. I'm afraid once used to describe the elementary basis of the subconscious mind.
Monsters from the id.
Huh?
Monsters from the subconscious. Of course, that's what Doc meant.
Morbius. The big machine, 8,000 cubic miles of Kleister relays, enough power for a whole population of creative geniuses, operated by remote control. Morbius, operated by the electromagnetic impulses of individual Krell brains.
To what purpose?
In return, that ultimate machine would instantaneously project solid matter to any point on the planet, in any shape or color they might imagine. For any purpose, Morbius. Creation by mere thought.
Why haven't I seen this all along?
But like you, the Krell forgot one deadly danger. Their own subconscious hate and lust for destruction.
The beast. The mindless primitive. Even the Krell must have evolved from that beginning.
And so those mindless beasts of the subconscious had access to a machine that could never be shut down. The secret devil of every soul on the planet all set free at once to loot and maim. And take revenge, Morbius, and kill.
My poor Krell.
Robbie re-enters the room.
After a million years of shining sanity, they could hardly have understood what power was destroying them. Yes, young man. All very convincing, but for one obvious fallacy. The last Krell died 2,000 centuries ago. But today, as we all know, there is still at large on this planet a living monster.
Your mind refuses to face a conclusion.
What do you mean?
Morbius. Morbius.
What?
Something is approaching from the southwest. It is now quite close.
Alta enters and joins Morbius and Adams at the window. Morbius runs his hand over a beamer, dimming the lights as they look out the window.
Robbie be wrong?
No, never.
Something is rustling the bushes outside.
There it comes.
A tree is toppled. Now several more. Dr. Morbius runs to the beamer that activates the outer plating and runs his hand over it.
I feel sorry for you, young man.
I feel sorry for your daughter, Morbius.
They watch as large dents appear in the plating.
Alta, go into my study.
You still refuse to face the truth.
What truth?
Morbius, that thing out there.
It's you. You're insane. How else would you have led it here where Alta must see you torn to pieces?
You still think she's immune? She's joined herself to me, body and soul.
Yes, and whatever comes, forever.
Say it's a lie. Shout, let it hear you out there. Tell it you don't love this man.
Not even if I could.
More and more dents appear in the plating.
Stop it, Robbie! Don't let it in! Kill it, Robbie!
Sparks fly from Robbie's head, and he remains motionless.
It's no use.
He knows it's your other self.
The plating begins to tear open, and they run for the secret Krell hallway. They enter the lab, and Morbius closes the doors behind them.
We're safe. Why'd you jumble that combination?
Whatever you know in here, your twin self out in the tunnel knows too.
I'm not a monster, you!
Morbius attacks Adams, who restrains him.
We're all part monsters in our subconscious. So we have laws and religion.
Let me go!
You've got to listen. We don't have much time. Here. Here's where your mind was artificially enlarged. Consciously, it still lacked the power to operate the great machine, but your subconscious had been made strong enough.
I won't hear you.
You've got to listen. 20 years ago, when your comrades voted to return to Earth, you sent your secret id out to murder them. Not quite realizing it, of course, except maybe in your dreams.
What man can remember his own dream?
At least when our ship was approaching from space, you remembered enough to warn us off.
Adams grabs Morbius by the shoulders.
But then, when you thought we were threatening your little egomaniac empire, your subconscious sent its id monster out again. More deaths, Morbius. More murder.
And now this too? Harm my own daughter?
But now she's defying you, Morbius. And even in you, the loving father, there still exists the mindless primitive. More enraged and more inflamed with each new frustration. So now you're whistling up your monster again to punish her for her disloyalty and disobedience. And if you don't do something about it soon, Morbius, it's going to be coming right through that door.
Morbius looks at the doors, beginning to buckle under tremendous pressure.
Solid Krell metal, 26 inches thick.
Look at your gauges. Look. That machine is going to supply your monster with whatever amount of power it requires to reach us. Look now!
The metal door is getting redder, and small cracks appear.
Red hot. Soon it'll be white hot. Then it'll soften and melt.
Say you don't believe this of me. Tell me you don't.
Alta only looks down. And Morbius slowly sits.
Then it must be true. Yes, I must be guilty.
Then help us, Doc. I've known you. I've known you great and noble like the Krell.
Adams draws his blaster. Morbius looks at the door, getting still hotter, smoke beginning to pour from it.
Guilty! Guilty! My evil self is at that door, and I have no power to stop it!
Adams lowers his blaster. A large section of the door falls away, and the energy gauges are all lit up. Rushes to stand before the entrance of the Krell lab. The energy gauges flash and Adams clutches out. Suddenly it stops. They rush over to Morbius, who has collapsed on the ground.
Oh, Father.
Son. Turn that disc.
Adams turns a small disc on a machine, and a switch rises out of the ground.
The switch. Throw it.
Adams pushes the switch down.
In 24 hours, you must be 100 million miles out in space. The Krell furnaces, chain reaction, they cannot be reversed. Oh.
Dr. Morbius falls limp in his daughter's arms. Adams checks his pulse. Later, the spacecraft is in space. Inside.
98.6 million. We're clear now. What an astrogator.
Robbie sits at the navigational controls.
A genuine privilege, Commander.
Activate main viewplate.
Aye, aye, Skipper.
That's Altair 4, the bright speck below the star. 15 seconds.
Yes, Altair. Your father, my shipmates, all the stored knowledge of the Krell. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1.
They watch the viewplate as a small light becomes very bright. Alta turns and buries her face in Adam's chest.
Alta, about 1 million years from now, the human race will have crawled up to where the Krell stood in their great moment of triumph and tragedy.
He looks her in the eye.
Your father's name will shine again, like a beacon in the galaxy. It's true, it will remind us that we are, after all, not God.
Adams holds her in his arms, and they share a small smile. We watch the ship disappear into deep space. The end.